Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. All hustle, no flow, and laughs aplenty in Motor City, USA. That's your quick summary of The Traitors, premiering tomorrow night on Comedy Central. Executive producer, co-creator, writer Zach Keenan joins me next. Girls is approaching its fifth and final season on HBO. The season begins Sunday, and we'll jump forward next half hour thanks to the co-star playing Ray, Alex Kapowski. Also ahead, a near-record Super Bowl and our classic trivia question of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Sammy Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A very bright Monday afternoon to you and all. 47 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. And wherever you are, we hope things are bright. And you're with us for the program all about television. We have some very bright people ahead in the hour ahead. And we invite you, of course, to be part of the program. It's so simple. Just raise your voice, pick up a phone, and use this number. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open, SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Guest 990 and our good friend Rick Beck from Philadelphia already in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Zach Keenan from The Traitors is live with us from Los Angeles after these news notes. The first Super Bowl going overtime ever attracted more than 111.3 million viewers on Fox last night. And that was Fox's largest Super Bowl audience ever and not a record. The record is retained by NBC. That's 114.4 million people who watched Super Bowl 49, the last time the New England Patriots won the championship in professional football 2 years ago. And due to the overtime, Fox puts its debut of 24 Legacy out of primetime on the East Coast, starting at 11 p.m. local time. West Coast viewers at 24 Legacy begin at 8 p.m. their time zone. Viewers and ratings for Legacy are expected 5 days in. And if you want to catch our recent interview with Manny Coto, the executive producer, co-creator, and writer on 24 Legacy, you can go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, iTunes, or Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer, co-creator, and writer of The Traitors, screening tomorrow night at 10:30 on Comedy Central, Zach Keenan. Zach, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. How are you doing?
Very fine, thank you. And it looks like the day before your show premieres, you're getting a ton of very positive reviews.
Yeah, it's great to see. Just saw some of those. Very exciting.
Is that surprising you?
I wouldn't say it's surprising me. It's a pleasant surprise. I didn't know what to expect, but it does seem like a lot of the reviews kind of picked up on what we were going for, which is just you know, a show about these two best friends and this sweet friendship and how they feel about their town, Detroit. So it's great to see people kind of getting that.
Mm-hmm. I want to welcome guest 1005 into our chat room. If you have a question or comment for Zach, give us the ring, 646-652-2906, or use that room, put your question or comment in, and we will get to it. Zach, how long did it take for Detroiters to go from not just your creation, but a bunch of other people into a Comedy Central series that we'll see starting tomorrow?
I think it was about maybe 3 years or 3.5 years, all told. Joe Kelly and Tim Robinson, Sam Richardson, and Jason and I all kind of figured out we wanted to do this show 3 years ago, and we knew it had to be about Tim and Sam and their friendship. I knew it had to be in Detroit, and pitched it maybe 3 or 4 months later. Then spent a year writing a pilot, shot the pilot, spent a year writing the series, then shot the series this last summer, and edited it until just now. It's a long process.
Was it the idea all along to have Sam Richardson and Tim Robinson, who are best friends in real life, play basically best friends trying to make it in Motor City? Or was it the case of it just naturally happened, where you just had the premise and they came along and voila, you got your best friends in real life in the plot?
No, I think that was always the intention. That was our starting point was, you know, these guys have been best friends for so long, they've performed together for so long, and their characters, you know, the whole thing, the city, their friendship, it's all a heightened version, obviously, a little fictionalized, but it's really based on what their friendship is like in real life. They're very sweet together, they're very loving, also very thin-skinned and have hot tempers, and so that kind of, you know, gives you a lot of range for comic possibilities.
How long have they been best friends for? Did it start in as kids? Did it start in high school or college? Did it start somewhere on the comedy scene?
I think it was in the comedy scene. Tim was Sam's instructor at Second City Detroit. And I think Sam was maybe 19 and Tim was 21. And that, so that's, yeah, a long time now. They're in their 30s. So right around then, and they came up together and then they did Second City in Chicago also.
But tell us what the plot is all about. We're talking about two people who are trying to make it in the ad world of Motor City. And Chrysler, by the way, figures very much, at least in the first episode. Explain how the plot developed and how the best friendship between these two people come into play.
Well, in the first episode, in the pilot, they have a small advertising firm, very small, where they do local commercials, like the late-night commercials for lawyers or furniture stores that are very low-budget and come on at late-night TV. Now, the agency used to be run by Tim's father when it was kind of in its heyday in the Mad Men era. And Tim's father has since gone insane and left it to Tim and Sam to take over. And they have been doing that for a while and notice that they kind of get the idea that there's an opportunity to pitch to Chrysler, kind of their big fish, and they make some bold moves and get a foot in the door, and they have to figure out what their pitch is going to be, and, you know, this is their big aspiration. And then the show is kind of about whether they get that or whether they don't and whether they really wanted that or whether they like the life that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any inspirations from previous comedies that you and the rest of the creators and writers drew upon, whether it is a buddy comedy like Laverne and Shirley or workplace comedies like The Mary Tyler Moore Show or Newsfront or others of that nature?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all watched a lot of TV. We watched a lot of TV growing up, a lot of those, you know, older sitcoms, watched a lot of current TV, and definitely inspired by all those situation comedies and workplace comedies, The Office and Cheers, you know, comedies like that, as well as The Simpsons or Mr. Show or, you know, Tim and Eric, any kind of weirder stuff. So all that has just played into our sensibilities in terms of how we write jokes and what kind of stories we wanted to tell. We tried not to hew too closely to, you know, things you've seen before in sitcoms, but it's unavoidable since they're all based in real life and the show is based in real life. But
we're talking about. So go ahead.
Sorry, say that again, Simon.
Go ahead. I quickly interrupted because I thought you had finished your thought, but go ahead.
I was just wrapping up. I was saying we watch a lot of TV and that's probably reflected in this.
We are talking to Zach Cannon. He is the executive producer, co-creator, and writer on Detroiters. It's Comedy Central's scripted series. It's getting a lot of great reviews from all over the place. And it premieres tomorrow night at 10:30 Eastern Pacific Time on that network. Zach joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise, the program all about television. Now it's 10th year on the air. Simon Applebaum live with you from the other coast, New York, where it's 47 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Zach, don't be shy. Ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04. But then we have guests 1005 gets 990, and Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, in the room. Coming up on our program Friday, one of our guests will be the popular critic from National Public Radio. He follows television. He's also a board member of the Peabody Awards, which are happening for year 76, May 30th here in New York, our good friend Eric Deegans. And we'll have other people, too, as well. So join us Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tamavi Televised. And stay tuned later this half hour, because we have a really neat prize in our new Classic Trivia Question of the Week contest. And it is a DVD set, box set, from Warner Brothers of the first season of the classic comedy Emmy winner Murphy Brown with Candace Bergen. So you can have a chance to win it if you're the first person to have the correct answer to our question. We'll pop up before the end of the half hour, so stay tuned for that. There are some other big people also involved with you and Craig and Tim, Sam and Tim in the making of the series. I'm talking, of course, about Mr. Guru of Saturday Night Live, Lauren Michaels of Broadway Video, and also Jason Sudeikis. Tell us what kind of input they've got into making this show.
Jason has had a lot of input. He's in a couple episodes, and he's executive producing it, and he gives us notes on the scripts and kind of big picture thing to small picture thing to being on set and helping out with performance notes. He has so much experience being on a set and performing and being in movies and TV that he's really been invaluable. And Lauren has Lauren's given a little guidance, but he's really, he's a little hands off on these things. He lets you do what you want, and that's also very appreciated on something like this.
Did you make the series in Detroit?
We did. We filmed all 10 episodes there. And we were very, very conscientious about it. We didn't even use, stock photography of a storefront from somewhere else or anything. It all is in Detroit.
What was it like to do the show there? I know that the city has been trying to get a hit television series for the last decade. ABC had a police series that was acclaimed, but it only lasted a season. And then a couple of years ago, there was Low Winter Sun, another drama for AMC despite some very interesting reviews, did not make it as well. We had the executive producer, by the way, and the creator of that series at the time, several years back. What's it been like to really now take the point position of trying to bring a hit series to that city?
The whole thing has been very, very positive, filming there, especially we made a point of trying exclusively to hire people, actors, and crew from Detroit as much as we could. And we've just found some amazing people in our crew and amazing, amazing actors to be in the show. Michigan used to have a tax incentive for filming, and so there was more of a film industry there, and that ended right after we finished the pilot, unfortunately. But we have been able to make it work, and it's really been, the city really welcomed us kind of with open arms. People want good things to happen there. They want business to come in. They want shows to come in. And it was a very positive experience. We enjoyed being there.
We're welcome guests 1024, 1025 in our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised on the Blog Talk Radio site. Both of you coming in, we welcome you. And if you have a question or comment for Zach, don't be shy. Pick up that phone, raise that voice, use that number, 646-652-2906, or, as another option, use that chat room. That is why it's there, and we do want to hear from you. Zach, what did Zach and Tim set as parameters for the show? How much of their lives together and separately is covered in the series? Were there certain parameters in terms of plots and punchlines and so forth that they would say either separately or together, go for it, and at the same time, plot lines and punchlines have said, nope, can't do it?
That's a great question. I think that's an ever-evolving line and parameter, and it's pretty specific to each instance. But, most of the stuff that's true to it are kind of like the relationship elements in terms of how they interact with each other. Or there's certain elements like Tim makes it hard for Sam to get a girlfriend, which is true in real life. certain relationship things like that. But in terms of their actual biographies, these are fictional characters, so there's not too much, but they're kind of sprinkled in. There's no hard and fast rule for what's allowed and what's not. But
What was the writing process like when you have so many people involved, headed by people who are best friends like Sam and Tim, who are seeing their lives, if you will, recreated on a television series?
The writing process has been, it's very collaborative. We've all worked together in past capacities. Joe and Tim and I all wrote together on SNL for a number of years. So we already have kind of a shorthand for how we write jokes, and Tim and Sam obviously worked together for a long time in Second City. So it was pretty fluid. We knew how to write jokes and what makes each other laugh and what doesn't. And then, so it just kind of worked well.
Since you brought up Second City, how much room was there for improv?
It depends. There's a couple places where we use it, but the improv we kind of do in the writer's room and then see what works. And then there's a few places where there was time to have fun on set. But you're trying to shoot 10 episodes and you have limited time, and so you try to get as much as you can just down.
The Saturday Night Live, the SNL connection, turned out to be quite good for your series because you had quite a few of the SNL regulars currently aboard, like Cecily Strong and Michael Chee, involved in guest starring roles. What was it like for them to go from sketch comedy, where they do it live on a regular basis, to doing something on film or tape where they're in a role?
I think it's not that new for them. And they also, their roles were a little bit sketchy. And I don't say that in a bad way. They kind of came in as sketch characters. And, I don't think they do taped pieces on SNL, and Cecily's been in a number of things. So I think it was probably just fun for them to come and see their friends in the summer. And Michael Che also, he wrote that episode that he's in, so he was very comfortable with it.
I've seen Michael, by the way, back in stand-up, and I've seen him on SNL. He is very, very funny, and thanks to SNL, he's really become a breakout force there.
Yeah, he's one of the funniest guys I know. Tim and I used to write with him a lot at SNL, and he's fantastic at it. And his stand-up is amazing also. Really smart and really funny.
And the guru of SNL, executive producer Lorne Michaels, is one of the executive producers on Detroiters. That's the show we're talking about this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Detroiters premieres on Comedy Central tomorrow night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. We've got the co-creator, executive producer, and writer on the series, Zach Cannon. He is live from Los Angeles here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York. Delighted you're aboard with us on this Monday afternoon here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Zach, give us that ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 my name. We have guest 124, 1025, Rick Weber, friend from Philadelphia, still in the room. And coming up our next half hour, HBO is getting ready to premiere the final season of Girls this coming Sunday night, and we have an exclusive interview coming up with one of the co-stars. He plays Ray. On the first episode, he gets a budding relationship with one of those girls, played by Allison Williams. I'm talking about Alex Kapowski. We will have him live coming up right here on Tomorrow Be Televised, so stay tuned in our next half hour. We have a call, Zach. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. Right. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, great to hear. It's been a while. Go right ahead. You are live with Zach Cannon from Detroiters.
Hey, Zach.
Hey, Rick.
I heard earlier you said that it took a year to write the pilot, and I've taken some sketch classes and been in some, like, improv classes and stuff like that, where sometimes there's an attitude like, hey, let's make a show in an hour. So you said it took a year to write the pilot. I'm really wondering what that process was and, like, why it would take a whole year, whether it was just notes from the network or what exactly happened.
That's a great question. It actually didn't take a year to write the pilot, but it was because Sam was shooting Veep and Tim and I were at SNL, we weren't able – we sold the show in the summer, and then we're not going to be able to shoot it again. I mean, not again. We weren't going to be able to shoot the pilot till the following summer. So we actually – we had a year to write it, which is which turned out to be very lucky. You know, just gave us a lot of time to write it and rewrite it. And the network did not – Comedy Central did not have too many notes. They're really good about that. They kind of let you – they kind of wait and see what you do. The notes they do have are very helpful. But, yeah, I don't know how long it actually took to write, but we had about 10 months to write it, and I think that was beneficial because we got to really dig into things and go back and look at scenes that had seemed funny at the time or seemed important at the time and say, well, what's better for the story or the characters? And yeah, so I don't necessarily prescribe writing a pilot in a year, but when it turned out that way, it seemed good for us.
No, that seems awesome, and I'm a little bit relieved to hear that. That it basically sounds like you guys were able to just write it and make it like just so tight over a year, as opposed to you were buried in notes or issues or something like that. So and your reviews are awesome. So far what I've seen so far, I really dig, and it seems like a really good group of guys that. You can kind of like. They're very likable. So that's really awesome and bodes well for the show. So definitely going to check it out. Best wishes.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Simon.
You're my welcome, Rick. Anytime. Take care. Rick Roll from Philadelphia here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. In addition to the SNL cast members, Zach, you got a bunch of other interesting guest stars from Malcolm Jamal Warner, of course, we know from The Cosby Show, and Abba Baba Tunde. And Richard Karn, former host of Family Feud, and, of course, co-star on Home Improvement. Was there a particular guest star that you and your crew wanted to get, and lo and behold, you got him or her?
Sorry, the question is, was there someone we really wanted to get that we did get?
Yes, well, a particular guest star that you wanted to get for this first season, and lo and behold, you got him or her?
A lot of them, yeah. We got some great... great guest stars. All the ones you mentioned were all people we wanted and written roles for. There's some great Detroit cameos. There's Rick Mahorn from the Pistons and Kevin Nash. And we got a lot of people that we were very excited to get. Trick from Detroit. It came out well. For a show that hadn't been on the air, we were very lucky to get people who were excited about the project. Oh, George Wallace was amazing. It was a really positive experience for us.
We mentioned in the first episode Chrysler is named. What's been the reaction of the people of Detroit and the auto industry and some of the other big businesses in that city to what you've done?
It was great. Chrysler is very, very on board, very supportive. Tim's real-life family is a long-time Chrysler family. His goes back generations. His wife works for Chrysler. They let us film a scene there. It was, the Detroit businesses that we mentioned or worked with are all very excited and supportive and wanted to be on board.
Detroiters, this Comedy Central's new scripted series, Lorne Michaels of SNL among the executive producers, and you can find it starting tomorrow night at 10:30 Eastern Pacific Time, and right after that, of course, it's The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, produced here in New York, and at midnight from L.A. with The Walls host and budding entrepreneur Chris Hardwick. Check your locals where Comedy Central is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.cc.com. It's www.cc.com. Zach Kanin, executive producer, co-creator, and writer on Detroiters. Thank you for joining us. Congratulations on the sensational early reviews. Hopefully, this first season is the beginning of a wonderful, wonderful run and a great thing for the people in the Motor City. We thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me on.
It is a pleasure. Take care, and all the best to your cast and crew.
Great. Thank you.
Beth Keenan from Detroit is joining us live from Los Angeles. Stick around, our Clap and Trivia questions coming up, and you can win a DVD box set of the first season of Murphy Brown if you got the correct answer. We'll post the question after a few thoughts on the fine folks at audible.com. Are you a fan of old-time radio? Well, if you know your old-time radio, you should know this, that before Dragnet, that classic police drama with just the facts person himself, Jack Webb and crew, before it was a TV show, it was a radio show. And in fact, the radio show continued while the TV show started and prospered. And now, thanks to the wonderful audiobook version from audible.com, you can get some of those classic radio episodes as part of a free trial to audible.com. Audible.com is the leading digital provider of spoken audio entertainment and information with over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can hear them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service. Of course, because Audible is part of Amazon.com, the customer service, incredible. So check out Dragnet. Get tuned to where old-time radio is good, and of course, we all know everything old is new again, or any of the great titles of any category you like. No matter what, you can be sure it's a wonderful sound experience that can last a lifetime. Great gifts also for Valentine's Day, too. AudibleTrial.com/televised. AudibleTrial.com/televised. Get yourself a free audiobook, 30-day trial, and find out why Audible is an incredible sound experience from Amazon.com. And now it's time for our Clash TV question of the week. And if you are first with the correct answer, have we got a prize for you? It is a DVD set of the complete first season of Murphy Brown, starring Candace Bergen in her Emmy Award performance from the gang at Warner Brothers. And if you are first with the correct answer to this question I'm about to pose, you can get that right here. Remember ABC's Wide World of Sports? It was around starting in 1961, 50-plus years ago. And here's the question. Name the first sport covered on ABC's Wide World of Sports. Jim McKay was the host. So do that. Name the first sport covered on ABC's Wide World of Sports. We'll give you two hints. Number one, it's not a professional league sport like baseball or football. Secondly, it is an Olympic sport. So two clues again, not a professional sport like baseball or football, and it's an Olympic sport. Name the first sport covered on ABC's Wide World of Sports. If you got the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And if you are first with the correct answer, you will win the DVD box set of Murphy Brown's complete first season from Warner Brothers. Again, it's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Please remember to include your name and your full mailing address. And if you're first with the correct answer, of course, we'll contact you and get the Murphy Brown DVD set right to you by mail. And if you missed the question just now because you just joined us, no problem. I'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and on my Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So please play, and all the very best. This is Tomorrow We Televise. We are the program all about the tube. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And coming up on our show Friday, among our guests, the popular National Public Radio TV critic and board member and judge of the Peabody Awards, the Pulitzer Prize of Media, coming back to New York for year 76 on May 30th. Our good friend Eric Deakins will be joining us. We'll get his thoughts about his favorite new shows of 2017 so far, what he sees our best bets ahead, his thoughts about where diversity is at in the media, and of course, the status of the Peabody's. Eric Deakins from National Public Radio and the Peabody Awards this Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And remember, we are also available with Tomorrow Will Be Televised through MediaVillage.com. It's the columns I write for with Jack Myers, Stuart Elliott, all the rest of the crew. So check it out at MediaVillage.com. That's MediaVillage.com. And we also do a Tomorrow Will Be Televised video segment here in the New York area on VK Live. That is the noontime weekday talk variety lifestyle hour about all things Brooklyn and beyond. You can catch it locally here in New York on Brick TV, throughout New York City on Verizon Fios, throughout Brooklyn and Manhattan on Charter Spectrum, throughout Brooklyn on Cablevision Systems, or Altice USA, as it's now being called, and RCN. And the segments are posted a day or two later on YouTube at youtube.com/BrickTV. That's youtube.com/BrickTV. And, of course, use our email, simonapple04@yahoo.com, to give us your feedback about our columns, our BK Live segments, and, of course, this program. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the man who plays Ray on Girls, going into his final season this Sunday on HBO. Al Kapotsky will join me right here after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to Best Internet Radio on the planet. It's blogtalkradio.com with more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Just the Story, the Urban Legend Podcast. Check it out. It's one of the most unique shows in all of radio, and you can catch it Saturday at various times here on Blog Talk Radio. Just a Story, the Urban Legend Podcast. And remember, you can catch the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com and also through Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to your local Apple store or order it online. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televised this Monday afternoon of February 2017. Simon Apple family with you live from New York. Live, you are aboard for the ride. And if you have a question or comment for our next guest, give us a call, 646-652-2906. At 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on BTR. Our chat room remains open. Simon Apple 04 by name. We welcome in guest 1033 and Rick Webber, our friend from Philadelphia, still in the room. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you. Well, after four seasons on the air on HBO, critically acclaimed, Emmy nominations, other things as well. Girls, created by and starring Lena Dunham, goes to its fifth and final season this Sunday night at 10 on HBO. And we have the wonderful privilege for the very first time having someone from Girls on this program. He's the person that plays Ray. And on the opening episode, he gets into a relationship in a big way with one of the co-stars, one of the girls themselves, Allison Williams. Joining me live right now in New York is co-star who plays Ray, Alice Kapotsky. Al, it's great to have you.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So what has it been like for you, the cast, the crew, Lena, et cetera, to go into the final season?
Oh, well, it's bittersweet. You know, we really have a lot of fun working on the show, and we've been doing it for a while now. So we know each other. We know each other's strengths and weaknesses. And Lena does everything she can to make sure that we're not only having a good time, but they're also participating in the creative process, each and every one of us. So it's sad to see that come to an end, but it's also important for Lena and the rest of the showrunners that we kind of finish with momentum and we kind of don't jump the shark on the show. So we also appreciate the context in which we've got to wrap things up.
From the get-go, Girls, as depicted by Lena and her fellow cast members, has all been about these four girls and how they become women in New York City. But with your character, Ray, how is your character and the men in Girls, how have they evolved over the four seasons and going to season five?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. I think initially they were sort of agitators and provokers to kind of draw out our understanding of the girls and to build tension and understanding and dramatic elements in their relationships. But as we spend time with the guys of the show, they slowly kind of become their own fully fleshed personalities with the underpinnings of, you know, insecurities, vulnerabilities, all this sort of stuff that we start to peel off and discover below the surface. And for me, playing Ray, one of the guys of the show, it was really kind of fun to see him show parts of himself that we haven't seen before and to have storylines and narrative arcs kind of revolve around that.
Mm-hmm. What did you like about this? By the way, have you done the is the 50s all wrapped up?
It's all wrapped up.
The most about how your character developed this final season?
Well, you know, there's a part of me that really likes, if not full-on loves, Ray. You know, I spent a lot of time with him. I know him pretty well. And he's a, you know, he's a real pain in the hindquarters often, but I also can't help but kind of root for him because of how much he's trying and how disoriented he is. And sometimes I can't help but be drawn to him. So it's nice that we can kind of send him up on a few positive notes as the season goes into as the show goes into the twilight. I think there's certain sort of relationship aspects that he has finally gotten some really healthy and much needed, long overdue perspective on. And I think also his artistic side, which we haven't seen too much of, is slowly kind of coming into its own. So those are two things that I think are very nice and uplifting and are kind of woven into his outro on the show.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you drew from your personal life or from instances of people that you talk to here in New York that you decided to put into your character this year?
Well, you know, I think in some ways Ray reminds me most of all on myself and who I was about 10 or 15 years ago I still have a lot of the problems and issues that Ray is negotiating with, but I hope I have a little bit of perspective on them. Otherwise, I don't think I can kind of put them in a comedic light. But I think that they're kind of an amplification of the fears and insecurities and confusions and mistakes that I was having and creating in my mid-20s. And I just kind of try to make a caricature of that person who I used to be and see if we can kind of, on top of that, give them a little bit of sort of depth and tension to keep it going over the course of six seasons.
And right from the opening episode, your character really gets into high gear with season five because you develop a relationship with Allison Williams, who plays Marnie. Explain how that happened. Were there any hints in the fourth season, for those who haven't seen the show, that this was going to happen or this was a possibility?
No, I don't think there was much of a foreshadowing of this. I think that's why when it did happen, it caught a lot of people by surprise. And that's what I liked about it, is that it was so unexpected. I think in many ways, Marnie was the girl that Ray could never get in high school. And there's this sort of still this sort of insecurity or shortcoming in his mind that he's grappling with in the Marnie character. I think she sees a bit of comfort in Ray. He's so supportive and attentive to her. And I think she's really seeking that after being with a person in Desi who's so tumultuous and unpredictable and volatile. I think she's the type of girl that at this point in her life anyway seems to run from one extreme to another in hopes of figuring out some sort of stability that ultimately she might find in the middle. So Ray at this point in her life is one of those extremes.
Alex Kropotsky plays Ray, one of the key co-stars on the male side of Girls, which is going into its fifth and final season this coming Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO. Alex joins me live here in New York this half hour. Internet Radio exclusive interview on tomorrow will be televised. Simon Applebaum, also with you in the Big Apple, 47 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy you are aboard this Monday afternoon, wherever you are across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you have a question or a comment for Alex, give us that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple041. Oh, we welcome guest 1077 into the room. Again, coming your way on Friday's episode, that's our next one, we will have National Public Radio television critic and Peabody Award board member and judge Eric Deegans. It's the second time on the program. He's been one of the best TV critics around, and he's also involved with the Peabody's, considered the Pulitzer Prize of Television, which will take place at Cipriani Theater in New York for year 76. On May 30th. It's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Alex, before the full filming started on this final season, did Lena and everybody else get together and sort of share, hey, this is where I want the series to go. This is where, you know, I want to make sure that no matter what, no matter where the plot goes, no matter where we end up last episode, last minute, you know, that this happens in the series, that you accomplish something of this nature?
I think the short answer to that is no. I think they kind of figure out a lot of stuff through the writing process and even initially through shooting the initial episodes. I think it's important for Lena to be flexible, to feel out the tone and the dynamics that just happen to change and flow out of those first sort of writing sessions. And also kind of, like I said, the trickling for the first few seasons of the show, episodes of the season, we shoot more or less chronologically. So I think she wanted to feel out how these initial arcs are kind of unfurling, and then the plan of attack on how we send people out. So it was, in fact, premeditated from a great distance ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. What's it been like to not just work with Lena, both as co-star and as writer, and as director, and back, she directed she co-wrote the opening episode this season on Sunday, and also directed two, but also to see her and the other girls grow as actors, as performers. What do you think, from your perspective, is the biggest advance that Lena has made as a writer and a creator?
Well, I think she's one of the first people to somehow managed to bring a independent film, American independent film sensibility to a mainstream audience. And by that I mean having comedic characters and relationships that are very grounded and honest and that, in my opinion, very accurately depict people who are really living today in New York and in Brooklyn specifically. I think a lot of, we haven't been seeing a lot of this these type of characters and relationships explored in this specific type of gritty tone, a tone that's been stripped of its polish and of its Hollywoodness, and to be really real and reflective, like I said, of people we know around her. And I think that's the part of the show that I'm most proud of. And I think, to answer your question, I think that's been the biggest accomplishment so far in the TV space.
And when you set a tone as Lena did from season one, where, as you mentioned, this is has an independent style of filmmaking, an independent style of writing, sort of this is my perspective here, take it or leave it, take the grit or not. In terms of her growth, was there something surprising? Was there something that you didn't expect in any capacity of what she's done that that really surprised you in a great way? It surprised you in terms of, oh, I didn't expect that when I took this role on that things were going to go in this direction, or that my character was going to have this kind of development or this pattern show up?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting question. There are a bunch of surprises. I think the ones I can kind of quickly comment out on. I wasn't really sure that the show would have a life, much less be woven into some sort of cultural conversation about really important issues. I just thought it might be too specific and weird and awkward to really catch on to a wide stream audience. But, you know, I'm wrong about a lot of things, and I'm very happy to say I was wrong about this. It really had a way, Lena found a way to kind of weave in very universal values into stories that are very specific, which is hard to do. I think another thing that surprised me is how much Lena did not change as a person after the show really started getting some attention. You know, a lot of 24, 23-year-old kids, once they're given the keys to a car that's as nice as this car was and to have as much control behind the wheel, they would change, you know. And in some ways, most often, they would change for the worse. Their egos would get swollen. The unsavory aspects of their personality might come into high relief. Now that happened with Lena. I mean, she just expressed this incredible grace and maturity by maintaining to be herself, a sort of goofy, self-deprecating person who doesn't take things all too seriously that often and can just let things sort of wash over her. And she's just like wise beyond her years. I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with her parents. A lot of it has to do with the fact that she kind of knew who she was to a large degree and didn't give a flying F if you didn't agree with her beliefs early on. And I think that conviction and also that sort of ability to brush things off allowed her to not change. And to me, even though I really, you know, was so impressed by her, even that was a great surprise to me, an incredible accomplishment to not change.
We were talking last half hour with Zach Ellman from Detroiters about the guest stars that for his series, which is going to season one tomorrow on Comedy Central, he and his crew were able to get. For your final season, you got no slouch in terms of guest stars. You got some biggies. You got people like Riz Ahmed, who was one of the breakout stars last year on The Night Of on HBO. You got Matthew Rice, Emmy nominee last year for The Americans at long last. And you've got, other than one of my favorite comedians, one of my favorite people in the world of comedy, Tracy Ullman.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that pretty neat? And we've had so many other ones across the seasons as well. I mean, it's a real testament to the fact that the show is speaking to people, that we're able to bring in these really, really, really amazing guest stars. And not only bring them in, but bring them in and hopefully show a side of them that we haven't really seen before. I mean, to get to see Riz playing a, like, stoned-out surfer dude compared to the other roles that he's been playing is really something quite impressive.
Mm. Did Lena and Tracy do a lot of talking together, sort of like exchange thoughts about the state of comedy or how, because Tracy also has sort of created her own avenue, if you will, in comedy. Here's somebody that started out as a music video star. I still see from time to time her hit, which was both a hit both the United States, and then of course she became a sketch comedy person with the Tracy Ullman Show and her various series for HBO and Showtime.
Yeah, I mean, Tracy Ullman is just a crazy genius. I grew up watching the Tracy Ullman Show pretty religiously. I was just blown away by this weirdo comedic energy that I've never seen anything quite like it before. But to answer your question, I don't really know. I wasn't involved in those conversations between Lena and Tracy, so I don't know what those ladies chatted about. It would have been fun to be a fly on that wall.
Yeah, it sounds before I like them. They've got to be kindred spirits because, like Lena, Tracy has that independence of her, and you saw that not only the fact the range of characters she would do on Tracy Ullman's show and her other subsequent efforts, but also this sort of, I'm doing the show my way. She says to the audience at the end, go home, go home, you know, and so on and so forth. And just like, just had tremendous, Fox and HBO show, et cetera, gave her a tremendous run to develop like all kinds of characters she wanted to do.
Absolutely. I think there is a comparison to be made there. You're right. They're both these really fearless people who are going to express themselves, and they don't care necessarily on how you feel about them. And based on the fact that they're both women and both doing comedy, there has been sort of, you know, it's much harder to pull that off. And to have two women do it in such a impressive way and to get the following that they had, and also just to be so original in the way that they did it. I mean, when I saw Tracy Ullman, as I said a moment ago, there was no one else like being as weird and as out there and absurd and gonzo as Tracy Ullman was doing it. It was just so provocative and disruptive. I remember when I saw it, even all those years back then. And I can say Lena's doing kind of the same thing in her own way with girls, you know, like no one was sort of depicting relationships and body types and all these other things the way I think the Hannah character was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Alex Kapowski. He is the co-star playing Ray on Girls, Lena Dunham's starring and created series that begins its fifth and final season, award-winning season, I might add, on HBO, Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern time. By the way, the first episode is a 45-minute one. Most others will be from 10 to 10:30 or thereabouts. Alex joins us live this half hour from New York here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum, also from the Big Apple. Delighted to have you with us this Monday afternoon. If you have a question or a comment, get it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04. My name gets 1077 to the room. And also our good friend Rick Webb, who was involved on the phone in our last half hour. When I was watching the Opus on Mary Tyler Moore over a week ago, there were a lot of references to the final episode that she did in the Mary Tyler Moore show. And it sort of hit me that sometimes when you think about doing a final episode, sometimes people look at it as we have to make this extra special. We've got to bring things to a whole complete conclusion. And then there are other series who say, let's do the final episode as a slice of life. You know, we're not going to make any big hard-hitting points. We're not going to bring everything to a recognizable conclusion. We're going to, you know, have it be just another day in this character or the cities or this this conception's life. How did everybody approach the final episode?
The former. We're going to treat this extra special. It's not another slice in the life of these people. Or, you know, it's not just another day in the life of these people. We're going to do something that's really memorable. And we're going to send them off in a way that really hopefully celebrates and, celebrates is the right word, the last 6 years of hanging out with this person. So I think to answer your question, it's definitely the first box of the two that you presented.
Was there a sense of we have to make it memorable, and was there anything like, you know, Lena pointed to or everyone pointed to, whether it was the last episode of Breaking Bad, which, of course, was very memorable, or even the last episode of Rectify this past fall on Sundance Channel, which in its own way was just as memorable, even though it went a different direction in how it wrapped up?
Well, I think those are great examples of awesome finales. I mean, I think if our finale is anywhere – you know, near as good as those finales, I think we're in good shape. I mean, those are all finales that people kind of reference, and they're, at least some of the ones you mentioned, people, you know, they're sort of classic finales. I think that's something we definitely strive to do, and I think people will be, I'm really curious to see what people say about it. I'm really proud of the way the show wrapped up.
Tough, easy, or something else to film that last scene?
I would say tough. I mean, like, you have a lot of mixed feelings going through your mind as a person, but as an actor, you just want to be focusing on one thing. That, you know, there was more swirling through my mind than I'd like there to be when I'm sort of working. So that's what made it tough for me, because you're trying to stay engaged in the scene, but here you are kind of knowing that this is the last time you're going to be in your character's shoes after 6 years, and you have all these memories and associations and feelings, and all you want to do is make sure the joke lands when you say it. So it was a little bit more challenging than it has been in the past, but, you know, good problem to have.
Do we know what Lena is going to do next? Is she going to take a break after 5 years of doing this series, or jump into something new? Has she been sparked by a new way she wants to go in television?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I can speculate a little bit based on knowing Lena a little bit. I think she's going to say, I want to take a long break and chill out and read books and hang out with my boyfriend. And then, like, 2 weeks later, she'll just start diving into another project. That's what I would predict.
Mm-hmm. Alex, what do you appreciate the most about what the audience thinks of your character?
That's an interesting question. I mean, maybe some people think of Ray as a person who is a moral center of the show, and perhaps that's not very much considering how perverse and depraved some of our principal characters are. But, you know, for all of Ray's flaws and insecurities and shortcomings, I think he doesn't often have moral or ethical transgressions. I think he kind of knows to some degree the line between right and wrong. And despite his anger and all the other things that I mentioned earlier, he's always kind of respected that line. And I think some people who dig his character appreciate that part of him.
Last year, Girls received an Emmy Award for Guest Actor in Television Series and Comedy. That was Peter Scolari. Of course, we know him from First Bosom Buddies, where his buddy was somebody named Tom Hanks, and then Newhart. Mm-hmm. He's back. And tell us what it was like working with him, and how has he resurfaced in his Emmy-winning role?
Oh, man, that's such a nice story. I'm so glad that he got the recognition he got for it, because I grew up watching Bosom Buddies, and Tom Hanks is amazing, too, and we're lucky enough to work with his wife. But Peter Scolari was, like, always this guy that I just, I don't know. My experience with him on the show is, like, he's been around the block, and he gave me a lot of advice, especially in season one, because I'd never worked on anything remotely as big as our operation was. So I was kind of intimidated a little bit at times, or confused, and I didn't know protocols and politics and stuff. And I was embarrassed to ask some people, but Peter's such a warm guy, and he went out of his way to make me feel comfortable around him, that I would often kind of ask those type of questions to him. So I've always had that kind of relationship with him. He's always been so sweet and supportive to me. And he's been kind of this amazing pillar, maybe a little bit on the periphery, but such a sturdy sort of part of our story over the years. And finally, for him to kind of get the Emmy that he got is pretty neat.
So, Alex, where do you go from here? Are you already starting to look for another co-starring role or a starring role of your own in a series? What's next for you in your TV career?
Oh, we'll see. I don't really know. Nothing is written in stone at the moment. I'm happy kind of continuing to work on my projects. I acted in a movie with Bob Odenkirk that comes out on Valentine's Day on Netflix, which I'm really proud of, called Girlfriend's Day. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I heard about Girlfriend's Day. Talk about that before we leave you. What's that all about?
Oh, sure, yeah. Bob Odenkirk, it's about the greeting card industry, and it's a film noir film that Bob Odenkirk stars in. He plays a kind of down on his luck greeting card writer. He used to be the king of the world, but he's had some personal setbacks that have made him this sort of marginalized figure. And in the movie, he's offered a chance to kind of get back to the top of this small, weird mountain of the greeting card writer's world. And I play his boss, as I often play people's bosses. And it's a really fun story. It's got this singular Bob Odenkirk energy about it that I couldn't be more proud to be a part of.
And, of course, that will be premiering Valentine's Day week as a Netflix original movie. Meantime, Girls, 15 primetime Emmy nominations so far in 4 seasons on the air, 2 Emmy Award wins, including one last year for Peter Scolari's guest performance in comedy, and it also, some years ago, also won the Golden Globe for Best Comedy Musical and Lena Dunham's own performance as an actress in a leading role. Girls premieres its first and final season this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO, and then right after that, the season premiere of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver at 11. Check your local listings for HBO is in your area on Cable and Satellite. For more details online, here's where you go, www.hbo.com. That's www.hbo.com. Alex Kapotsky, thank you again for making the time to join us. Have a great time with the final season, and I think the audience is going to really enjoy what Lena, you, and everybody have to do for your fifth and final turn on HBO. All the very best to you, and also all the best to you and your crew also on the Netflix movie as well.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
You are very welcome. Take care. All the best.
You too. Bye-bye.
Alex Trepotsky from Girls. He plays Ray. And again, fifth and final season with him and Lena Dunham and Cast this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on HBO. Before we go, a couple of quick comments about the Super Bowl. If you missed it at the top, we told you that over 111 million people saw the Super Bowl last night on Fox. It is the third largest viewing audience in history. It was a record for Fox. It was not a record overall. That's still held by NBC for what it did 2 years ago. That's time the New England Patriots won that Super Bowl. And very ironic that in both cases, last night and 2 years ago, it was a lack of a running play by the opposing team, Seattle Seahawks in 2015, the Atlanta Falcons last night, that may have been the trigger for their downfall to the Patriots. Congratulations to the Patriots and the Falcons as well for being in that game. Congratulations also to Joe Buck and Troy Aikman for their call on Fox. And on Westwood One Radio, Kevin Hall and Boomer and Simon were both marvelous. But I was going to say one other thing, too. If there was one big disappointment, it was the commercials. For the most part, they were terribly inarticulate. They were terribly illiterate. They didn't make any sense. You had to wonder in many cases, I'm not going to name names, why these commercials went on the air. But there was one commercial that should have been on the air, and that's a commercial called The Journey that was made by 84 Lumber, a company that has 250 stores around the country. They're building supply people. And what they did was a six-minute vignette that was absolutely incredibly done, no matter where you see the subject matter. I thought Fox should have put that vignette on its entirety during halftime of the game, and like Fox News Channel, let the audience decide. You can see, by the way, the Journey in its entirety on YouTube, and I hope you do. No matter where you stand on the issues or the subject matter raises up, it's a marvelously done effort. And good luck to 84 Lumber. I hope that somehow it does get on broadcast television down the road. Friday on Tomorrow We Televise, Eric Deegan, National Public Radio TV critic, and the Peabody Awards board member and judge. He's one of our guests. That's this Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Televised. If you came in on today's show late or want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast. A lot of people have so far this month. We've had about 850-900 replays so far going into today. You can check it out on iTunes. You can also go to Apple TV's iTunes podcast app, along with other Blog Talk Radio shows. Catch us, download your smartphone, tablet, and take us on the go. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts about the Super Bowl and how those ads did or how the commentary did? And what's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? We'd love to know. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. UBCSimonTWBT. However you communicate with us, and I do return communication within 24 hours, we appreciate what you have to say because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not say those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams, and he chose Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, for a 30-day trial of a free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/televise. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your week. We are back Friday with Eric Deegan of National Public Radio and the Peabody's. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Please be safe and be great out there. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.